Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Dana Buckler Show. My name is Dana, and I am super pleased to welcome back to the podcast, great friend of the show, writer, director, author, Kelly Goodner. Kelly, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for doing this. So we were just saying right before we were recording that time really has no meaning, because in my mind, you were on the show just a month ago when we were discussing the Jaws franchise. And I think that was like in 2020. So again, it's great to have you back on, but you want to just dive a little deeper into this time has no meaning, because I'm starting to believe it.
Well, it's funny because, you know, we just had the July 4th weekend, and I remember watching Jaws last, you know, year, talking to you round about that time. And I mean, I've really barely left this room. Like, even though lockdown has opened back up, I'm still not going around much. And even this conversation, it's like, you know, the fifth conversation I've had with a human. So it could be kind of rocky.
No worries. We're old hats at this. We've done this a number of times, and I have all the confidence in the world that we're going to have a terrific conversation. But before we get into the topic of today's episode, you mentioned that lockdown has started to lift in Los Angeles. Is there anything that you've had an opportunity to do recently that you've been looking forward to since this whole thing began?
I just went back to the movies. And well, because part of my thing, too, is that we have a dog who can't be left at the house. So he's kind of been sort of on hospice, like the whole pandemic. And someone has to be with him all the time. So basically, I've not left the house. It was like convenient that the pandemic came along, because I couldn't leave the house anyways. And so now that like the world has opened back up, I'm like, but the dog is still here. And so, which is good, you know, of course, but I'm still like, we had to give him some hemp and then sneak out to a movie, like an early morning movie during his normal nap time. But I did make it to Forever Purge.
Okay.
And it was glorious just to be out of the house in a movie theater, like, you know, using a public bathroom, just the whole thing. Parking was all kind of exciting.
That's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. So you answered my question. I was going to ask you, what was your first, you know, return to the theater movie?
Well, that's what was so funny. It's like, of all the movies, it was terrifying, because it's like happening in the world, sort of. It's very like, you know, ripped from the headlines-ish, you know. And I was like, ah, you know, but I was still just so happy to be out in a movie. I didn't care that it was, you know, kind of a dark vision.
How many Purge movies are there? I've only ever seen the first one, and I know this is off topic from what we're going to be discussing, but I know you're the expert in this.
Well, I do love the Purge movies. And they get so much better. I'm trying to think of the one. I forget all their titles, but I think there are four total, and then a TV show, which is also really good. But the first one is like they're confined in a house, and then they start expanding the world. And so it's like, oh, you see the whole city purging and stuff. And then you see like the, one of them is the first purge. And, you know, so like there's, and then they get like into a more kind of sci-fi, you know, future political scene. And so they really get big.
Is there a continuity between the films? I know you said there's the first Purge, so that's clearly a prequel. But is there a continuity to where you have to watch them in a particular order?
No, which is kind of the fun thing about the series. Like, you can just hop in, you know, wherever. Because I think there might be one actor who's in two of them, like maybe two and three. But in general, no, they're not connected at all.
Okay. All right. Awesome.
Well, just hop in.
Oh, I definitely will. I definitely will. That's awesome.
And they're more now, they're not even, like, they're categorized as horror, because the first one was clearly supposed to be a horror movie, but now they're kind of more like Escape from New York or something. They're like, you know, a little more, they're not sci-fi, but it's like a futuristic action, slightly. Alternate reality.
Is that still Blumhouse that's making them?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for them. I love what they're doing. Yeah,
no, and they're really, really good. They're some of my favorite movies, Purge movies.
Awesome. You know, Kelly, I was really looking forward to this conversation, because when we did our Jaws sequel sort of retrospective and conversation on the Jaws franchise, one of the byproducts of that conversation was you produced a list of your 10 favorite shark movies. And
yes.
I was 50% on having seen them. And so it created this awesome call to action. And I went back and revisited all the ones that you talked about.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Deep Blue Sea 3 was terrific. Bait.
Yay!
Bait was phenomenal. I loved Bait. I mean, great call on that. So, of course, always look forward to having you on the show. And, you know, we were kind of kicking ideas back and forth on what the topic of discussion would be. And then you presented me with a really, really interesting concept for an episode. And I thought maybe I would have you describe to the listeners the idea you came up with. And we haven't figured out the title for this episode yet. So when you're listening to this, you're going to know the title, but we're still formulating it. But Kelly, why don't you let the listeners know sort of the idea that inspired you to come on the show?
Well, I also enjoyed talking about sharks and making up a list. And so I think it partially came out of that, but I didn't want to talk about movies that people had talked about 1,000 times, you know, like I just kind of wanted to turn people on to like some different things or, you know, some films that I like that I rarely run into people who have seen them, you know, but I like when you're into horror, you're like often digging through a bunch of movies that you don't know what they are. And so there's kind of this like prize in the cereal box aspect to it. And so you do that, you know, constantly. And so many of them are duds. And then when you find one that you're like, whoa, that was really good, you get really excited. And it like keeps you addicted to looking for, you know, these prizes in the dustbin. And so these were basically 5 movies that I kind of found over the years and have held on to that also are available-ish for listeners, because a lot of the ones that, like, I initially had a longer list and I was like, yeah, they're only hard copy or they're just, you've got to find them used somewhere, you know? So I didn't want people to have to search so long, you know, and then forget about the movie.
You are certainly invoking memories of, you know, my video store days in the
late '80s. When you just didn't know what anything in the horror aisle for sure was.
No.
Anything really in any aisle.
And, you know, of course, the one downside to that, although I used to love it, I would spend, you know, hours at a video store picking out 2 or 3 tapes to take home. And you committed to watching those films because you paid hard money for that. Whereas in today, you know, it's easy for us to turn something off, especially if it's on a, you know, subscription streaming service, if a movie doesn't captivate us in the first 10 minutes, I know I'm guilty of doing that.
True.
And so, but back then you would definitely commit to watching the whole thing. And maybe sometimes you wouldn't realize you had a gem on your hands until 30, 40 minutes into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I am really excited to talk about, or at least have you, you know, recommend some of these movies. And I love the fact that you are making them, as you say, mostly accessible. You did send me a list and I was able to watch a couple of them and I was having a great time with one in particular. But why don't you kick things off with your off the beaten path horror movies?
They're in no order whatsoever. But so I picked 5 and they are Blue Sunshine, Curse to the Bite, Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell, My Demon Lover, and White of the Eye. One other thing I wanted to say about these is a lot of the reason I chose them also is because I didn't want to pick things that people would come across when they were just looking for horror. So these are kind of like miscategorized or, you know, not always included in the horror lists. Like they might be filed under suspense sometimes, but it's like actually a horror movie. So that's part of the theme.
Okay, awesome.
Just to make it more difficult.
Yeah, I love it. So why don't you just, like you said, no particular order. So I'll let you just start with the first pick and let's just talk a little bit about the movie and why it made your list.
I guess I'll start with Blue Sunshine, which for my research, I still don't know all that much about. This one, it's from the 70s, directed by Jeff Lieberman, who, if you've seen a lot of horror movies and you've really dug low in the bin, you have probably come across Just Before Dawn, which is a film that he did. And he also did one called Squirm. But Blue Sunshine is like his cult classic. And it's kind of funny because it's clearly a horror movie, but it's got almost like a political thriller art film way about it. And it's about this kind of acid called Blue Sunshine that people took in like 1967 on a college campus or whatever. And now that drug dealer is like running for public office. He's like a politician now. And for some reason, you know, like people used to have like acid flashbacks. It's 10 years after they took the acid. It's like turning them into homicidal maniacs who go bald.
Love it.
So it's like the first thing you know is like, why are all these people, you know, losing their hair and like also, you know, having these uncontrollable bursts of rage. But so it's kind of cool that the monster is just basically bald.
And I haven't seen this one yet. And I've got just a couple. Oof. You know, I don't want to get into spoiler territory because the ones that I haven't seen, I'm going to watch. I can't wait. But, you know, you said this is more or less a cult movie. When did this come on your radar?
You know, it came on my radar. I mean, I'm trying to think. Twitter was invented already because Wiley Wiggins, I was following him on Twitter. He's an actor who was in Dazed and Confused. He's like the lead actor in Dazed and Confused. And he's kind of an art guy and likes really cool films. And he was like talking at some birthday of his, like that his wife had gotten this Blue Sunshine poster. And I, of course, was like, what's that? You know, I've never heard of it, and that cannot stand. So I had to look it up and find it. And so it was in the 2000s, I guess. You know, I guess that's a long time now. it could be in the 2000s, so it's like 21 years. But yeah, I didn't discover it as a kid or anything. I discovered it late as a, like, from a cult follower of it.
As somebody, you're somebody who consumes a ton of movies, a ton of horror, a ton of everything. Like, you remind me, well, I'm sure, like, Jim, you see everything. I mean, putting the pandemic aside, you take the opportunity to see as much as you can. Now,
I do see a lot. I see a lot less than I used to see. Okay. A lot less.
So I'm going to ask you each time with this one, just take me through your first viewing of Blue Sunshine and when did you sort of have the aha moment?
Well, I mean, I think the aha moment is, I mean, because I watched it with Jimmy for the first time, like he hadn't seen it. And so I introduced him to it and I like saw him have the aha moment. I think it's going to be the same aha moment, whoever you are watching the movie, because the first person you see go berserk is like, no one could expect it. You know, you just like, if you haven't, you know, seen a trailer or something like that, you're just not going to expect it. And it's not gore or anything. It's just, it's a very odd kind of artistic way it has about it. And yet it's very like matter of fact, like it's kind of low budget and yet it kind of has a scope to it. It's a very odd movie, but basically the first time you see the monster is definitely like you're hooked.
Okay.
Which that's pretty early. That's, you know, kicking off the second act or something. It's pretty early in it.
What I'm going to do is you've listed here, you know, where you can find this movie. And you've listed Blue Sunshine it's on Alamo Drafthouse website to rent. And it's also on YouTube. And when you say YouTube, is that YouTube to rent or did you actually,
the thing is, it's one of those movies that goes in and out of print all the time. And so like there are some copies out there that like on Amazon, you could try to buy used, you know, versions of. And then somebody has put it on YouTube and maybe just because it's not available, it's not like technically in print now, it's allowed to be there. I don't know. Okay. But it was on there.
Okay, awesome. All right, perfect. All right, so Blue Sunshine, number one on your, well, not number one, the first one on your list. Like you mentioned, no particular order. Which one would you like to talk about next?
Curse 2 is up next on my list.
Which
you did see.
I watched this morning.
What a way to start your day.
But I watched it with my coffee and was just hanging out outside enjoying the weather. And I was like, and I am, okay, I just want to go put this out there. I have a crippling phobia of snakes. Crippling.
Oh, yeah, me too. That's half of the appeal of the movie is just it's so repulsive and the snakeness.
So why don't you give the basic synopsis of what this film is about for the listeners?
Well, this is a tough one to synopsize without like giving it away, because when I watched it, I didn't know anything about it. It had some kind of like, I just watched it for the first time a few years ago, probably. And it had some kind of cryptic log line. So I went in not knowing, you know, what this was going to be. But suffice it to say, I think it's radioactive snakes. I think that's all I can give, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a boyfriend and girlfriend on a road trip, and they come across some radioactive snakes.
I think that's where you should leave it.
Yeah. And Jamie Farr.
I was watching it, and I watched there's a version of Curse 2, The Bite, available on YouTube. And I want to start by saying, sometimes when you watch a YouTube video on your phone, the resolution is better, because I started Curse 2, The Bite on my 55-inch flat screen via YouTube. And it was too blocky.
The resolution was too good.
The resolution was it was almost unwatchable. So I put it back. So I actually watched this on my iPhone with my AirPods, and I could make it out a lot better, but it was still a little bit distorted. And I was mentioning to you that I kind of think that added to the allure and charm of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of darkly, well, not the whole thing, but some of the snake creature, because it is a snake creature. It's not just snakes. There is like a creature also that we're building toward. But all of those scenes were just also shot darkly, I think, to kind of like hide effect things. So it's like, but even not being able to see some of those things, which were made by Screaming Mad George, who is like huge. He's done some of the craziest effects there are. So I'm sure they would have been great, but it's just the idea of the whole, like they're just being snakes everywhere. Like right in the beginning, even before they get to the snake creature, like you don't even know you're going to get a snake creature. You're just like, oh my gosh, there's actual real snakes around in this movie, like all the time. It's like she pees by the side of the road, there's a snake, you know. She goes in the shower, there's a snake. There's like a snake in the car, you know. Everywhere is a snake. And so like that is terrifying.
Yes. And you know.
And that road full of snakes. Oh my God. Oh.
And nightmares. You mentioned Jamie Farr is in this. And I immediately picked up on Sidney Lassick. I've never really seen him in anything other than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Cursed to the Bite.
Well, he's in a lot of the kind of stuff I dig up. I see a lot of him.
So I just wanted to say, just these ratings mean nothing to me. But I just want to just for the sake of where these things stand in the sort of the IMDb rating world.
Oh, God.
Blue Sunshine has a 6 point, is a solid 6 out of 10, which I think is great. That's really, for smaller
cult-like movies. I thought it would be higher, actually.
Really?
See, I gotta say.
I look at that for this type of small cult movie. I think that's a good score.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing I think that if you watch low-budget stuff, independent stuff, you know, you've watched a lot of odd stuff, you don't hold the production value against it. You know, but if people have seen it who, you know, expect everything to be like the Avengers, I can see them lowering the rating.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Curse 2, The Bite is a 4.8 out of 10, which I think that should be higher.
I agreed.
You know, when you're rating this, with the IMDb rating scale, it's 1 out of 10. When you're watching a movie called Curse 2, The Bite, which is from the glorious year of 1989, what are you expecting? You get 6 or 7 stars just for the title and the year the movie came out. I'm just going to say that. So I'm not agreeing with this rating.
Well, I've also heard that IMDb like weights their ratings in a weird way. So I think the fact that not as many people have seen Curse 2 lowers the rating automatically. Like, I think it's unfairly ranked, I'm saying.
Well, that's interesting. Now, think about, you're right. Now, here, I'm glad you say that. We're doing a little detective work in real time here. Blue Sunshine's rating of 6 out of 10 is from 2,500 ratings.
Wow.
And Curse 2, 4.8 out of 10 is from 1,200.
So interesting.
So, yes, it's less than half. So, I think your theory holds water.
I think this is actually probably a good thing to look up for each of these. Like, so that you know, like, how rare we're talking here.
Yes, yes.
You know, that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
Especially for, like, it's a cult movie, and that's as many as it has.
Yeah. No, this is good. We're on to something here. This is really good. So, I just want to say that Curse 2, The Bite, if you're super squeamish when it comes to snakes, just be warned. And I will say, you mentioned the special effects. A movie that does all practical effects gets an 8 out of 10 automatically for me these days. And so I'm going to be kind of spoiler free about this, but I liked the creature that was in it. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, no, me too. Well, and I was so surprised because you don't know what movie you're getting. You just think, well, it's something to do with these snakes, you know? And then when you start realizing, wait, radioactive means mutant. Then you're like, oh my, what are we in for? And then you just have no idea. And it's also got a couple of people in it. Jill Sholin, were you a fan of hers?
Oh, absolutely. You know, she reminded me, for some reason, she reminded me so much of the actress that's in Roadhouse. Not Kelly Lynch, but the one of the bartenders or one of the cocktail servers from Roadhouse. I can't remember her name. It's escaping me right now.
I don't remember.
I genuinely thought that was her for a moment, but she's terrific.
I always enjoy her. And she's very like, she brings me back so much to a moment in time. And so it's got her, and then it's also got the guy in it. I was like rewatching this and I was like, oh, he's huge. You know, I can't remember his name, but he's enormous. So then I look up his IMDb and I'm like, what do I know this guy from? It can't just be Lombada. From 1990. Well, yes, it was. I have just seen Lombada, I guess, so many times that he was enormous in my world.
I have never seen Lombada, I have to admit.
Oh, that's a good one, too. It's not horror, but it's a good one.
That's awesome. So, J. Eddie Peck is yes. The actor's name, and I'm just looking over his filmography, and he's doing a lot of television work.
Yeah.
You know, he's still working today. He's the coach in the 2008 series Just Jordan, and he's been in Kyle XY, you know, he's working.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But for me, it was like Lombada is on my, like, I don't want to say guilty pleasures because I don't really feel guilty about it, but it's in that vein of like always fun, you know, just a good find. It's like high school teacher by day, Lombada dancer by night.
Did you happen to catch, because one of the things that I caught was a very, very, like, you got to really put this together, Terminator connection.
In Curse 2?
In Curse 2. I recognize her. The character was Trucker Big Flo, and she was played by, I can't pronounce her name correctly, excuse me, Marianne Mullerly, okay? And she was... Well, she's credited in the first Terminator as Wrong Sarah Connor.
Oh, yeah. I know who she is.
She's the one that opens up. She's the first Sarah Connor on screen.
Yeah.
And so
she has the short, curly hair.
Yeah.
And
and her character is Trucker Big Flo.
Oh, right. Yes. That because Jamie Farr is like, you know, on the case with the CB truckers trying to track them down with an antidote.
Yep.
Which I have to throw out there because I know I say like radioactive snakes. And if you're somebody that watches or has tried to watch a lot of the horror movie creature features and you've seen the made for TV ones that are modern or just like made for video, whatever, their version of radioactive snakes is not this version of radioactive snakes. Like this is, as you say, all practical effects. It's like all the stuff that is not fun about modern radioactive animals is, you know, missing from this film.
No, the first, and I'm trying to stay away from spoilers, but like the first time you get a glimpse of the radioactive, you know, snake, you just kind of feel bad for it. Like, oh,
I know.
It's all like, yeah, the guy's like trying to feed it a little snack. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, this guy isn't so bad. Wrong. So. All right, so that's Curse 2, The Bite, is available on Amazon, and you can watch it the way I watched it on YouTube, but just understand that the resolution is not great, and I would definitely recommend you watch it on your phone versus the TV if you're going to do the YouTube route, or maybe an iPad. So, good. That was a great one. I had a blast with it, Kelly. Great job.
I'm so glad, because that's the one I thought, I was a little worried. I was like, I hope he likes Jill Sholin, because that's, you know, if the gore is going to turn him off. He's going to have a hard time with Curse 2.
Yeah. I was watching this movie and I just had kind of a smile on my face, you know, looking at the actors who are in it. And I was just like, and you're going to hear me say this, I've said this a million times, but they just don't make movies like this anymore. And, you know, when you look at movies like what The Asylum's doing, you know, with all their, you know, you know, eight-headed shark attack or whatever, you know, there's some fun to be had in those movies, but they're all really wonky CGI effects that take you out of it. Whereas, you know, this film that's 32 years old has sort of the same charm as one of those asylum films, but it's so much better because the practical effects.
Yeah. I mean, it just adds so much to know that, like, they had to stand there with it, you know, like, even if it's not working 100% properly. You know, it's still like you feel that it's there and that they're actually looking at it, you know, and are actually repulsed by it.
Absolutely. Okay, so number three on your list.
Number three is Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell. And this is a TV movie that I discovered, again, this was just a few, again, I've lost track of time, but a few years ago, maybe, I think. And I was writing, like, a horror dog movie. And so I was looking up all horror dog movies. I discovered Devil Dog, Hound of Hell, which is a TV movie directed by Curtis Harrington, who is, like, best known as sort of an art house horror guy who is, he's more art house than horror generally. He did things like Who Slew Auntie Rue? And What's the Matter with Helen? He likes a question mark at the end of his title. And he's, yeah, so there's just something a little bit artsy about it, even though it is a straightforward TV movie starring Richard Crenna.
And this is Richard Crenna. This is, you know, Richard Crenna. A lot of people obviously immediately associate him with as Colonel Troutman from the Rambo, the first three right. Rambo movies. But he had been a working actor in television and movies. I mean, we're talking, we go back, you know, just like to 1951.
Yeah, you know? No, because I looked up his resume to think, like, oh, what was he known for before that, you know, before Rambo? And it was just, it just went back and back and back and back. Like, he had just been a working actor forever.
Let's really set the time period, because this movie, Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell, you mentioned that it was a TV movie.
Uh-huh. Right?
Well, this was a TV movie during a time when there was only four channels, and one of those channels was PBS, and this movie did not air on PBS. So, like, this was a movie that a lot of people had an opportunity to see in 1978.
Yeah, I would think so. But they made so many more of them. I was just doing a project where I was looking up TV listings from the 70s, and it was, I mean, there were new movies every night, new TV movies. It kind of like now there are on Hallmark or something, you know, there are constantly new movies. It's just they were actually on the main three networks.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, 78, that was the year I was born. So I'm just like, I have no wheelhouse for what that must have been like, but I'm sure people just took it for granted. You know, oh, that was, yeah. What's the movie?
I mean, I found so many of them just like digging them up because I'll be like, that sounds great. Or, you know, you'll hear of actor, like great directors or great actors who all had like, you know, a great role or a great movie, but it was a TV movie, you know, like before they got to be big. And so I watch a lot of them.
What was...
And they're not all great, I will say.
tell me how far into Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell before you were like, oh, this one's going to make my list.
You know, it kind of started to get me around the kids. You know, because at first it was like, all right, you're adopting a dog to do a satanic ritual or something with, you know, like that's the first scene. It's like adopting a dog to do like some sort of, you know, occult ritual with. And then you get into like the family story who adopt the dog. And once it was like the kids are introduced, it's Kim Richards and Ike Eisenman from Escape to Witch Mountain. Do you know those kids?
Oh, well, yeah, I know the movie. So the names might be escaping me, but I certainly know the movie. Yeah.
And so they're playing brother and sister again in this. And so I was into that. And then R.G. Armstrong, if you know who he is, he just shows up like as a fruit vendor or like he drives a fruit truck. And I was like, okay, so all of this I'm into the R.G. Armstrong, these kids. And like, the reason they get the dog is their dog was run over and you don't see it or anything. It's just the dog was run over. So, and the girl, it's her birthday, and she's like, I'll never be okay again. And then R.G. Armstrong comes up with his fruit truck, and it's got puppies in it. And she has, like, forgotten the dog that just died, like, seconds ago. And just between those few things in short succession, I was like, all right, I'm with this movie.
You're all in.
Yeah, I was like, these kids are making no sense already. They're melodramatic. I'm into this.
And you listed the Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell, is newly available on Amazon. Is that Amazon Prime, or is that going to be an Amazon rent?
It actually just came out on Blu-ray. So I think it's going to be available in, like, every, you know, probably to rent, I would think.
Okay.
Probably.
All right.
But I actually got the Blu-ray, like, the second I saw it was coming out. You know, I was, like, pre-ordering Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell, because I had only seen it on YouTube, I think.
I am. As I'm talking to you, let me just plug this in. Devil Dog, Hound of Hell. Let's see what comes up on YouTube. Oh, we got the full movie here on YouTube, but it's...
There you go. I think that's how I watched it the first time.
Okay, and that's how I'm going to watch it tonight when we're done recording. Excited.
Yeah, I don't want to build it up too much. It's just, it's kind of an interesting story. It's basically this dog is, like, possessed or something, and it possesses other people. And so it starts taking over this guy's family, basically. And, you know, I've never seen a dog do that, so... I've seen a lot of horror movies, so it's, like, an interesting conceit. But Curtis Harrington, who made the movie, hates it. I listened to, like, the special features, and he is not a fan.
Interesting.
He was like, he hated the script, but, you know, it was just like, it was offered to him, he needed the money, took it, but hated the script and didn't bother changing it because he was like, oh, what would help? So, but I actually think he's being, you know, he's being overly hard on it. I will give him, like, they build up this big kind of demon dog thing. And then, like, this is his major problem with the film, is when you finally see it, it's like nobody would be scared of it. It's just, it's like a silly dog in a wig or something. But if you imagine that it was scary, it would be good.
I love it. I love it. So the IMDb rating for Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell, is 5.2 out of 10.
Over Curse 2.
Over Curse 2, however, just 1,100 reviews.
Oh, interesting.
So Curse 2 is 1,200 reviews, so just a hair under.
Okay.
But it's above Curse 2, so just a hair under how many votes or how many people reviewed it.
So that's about where we're at.
Yeah, yeah.
Like 1,000-ish reviews.
So this is good. This is good. So I'm excited for this one. So what is next on your list?
Next on my list is My Demon Lover.
Okay. Let me pull that up on IMDb. Oh, I've seen this.
Oh, I love it. I've always loved it since I was a kid.
Yes, I've seen this. I rented this. This was a rent.
What? Yeah, this was like a, you know, it got a real, it was New Line.
Yeah.
You know.
I'll read the synopsis here, or the little log line.
Yeah, yeah.
On IMDb. Now, mind you, everyone listening, when I read this, this is a movie from 1987, and it is rated PG-13, and it says a homeless street musician becomes a demon when sexually aroused. So.
Sold.
So, how do you not watch that? I'm all in.
Yeah. And it's a comedy on top of it. It's a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Horror romantic comedy.
Yeah. And it's Scott Valentine. I mean, this
yeah. The jokes are good. I mean, it's uneven. There's some clunky things. The demon itself, like, he changed, like, none of the demon elements look the same. You know, every time you see a demon, it looks different than the last demon, which is kind of fun, I think. And the actress in it, I think, is so adorable. And I ran into her in real life. I was drawn to her even in real life.
Awesome.
And was like, oh my God, my life has finally come to the culmination point.
So when did this movie come on your radar? Because I remember this was a rental. I rented this when I was probably 11 or 12 years old. This would have been 89, 90. I just remember this VHS box.
Yeah. Was it 86? Is that what it says?
Well, it's listed as 87 on here, but sometimes IMDb is off by a year.
Mm-hmm. I was probably then 6 when I saw it. Okay. 6 or 7. So, of course, you know, this is like me, like, what is being aroused? You know, like, trying to understand the concept of demons and sex and all of it was, you know, a lot to wrap my head around.
Interesting.
It's very thought provoking. I think I was renting it too. I don't think it came on TV.
No, I remember this was like one of the ones I was allowed to rent because what it was rated. You know, like my parents were a little strict on me, but this one had a PG-13 rating. And I remember,
yeah, it's not too raunchy despite the concept.
No, it's really not, but it pushes the boundaries a little bit from what I remember. And it's probably been 25, maybe. Oh my goodness. It might be. Oh, Kelly, it might be.
Don't say it.
It may be 30 years since I've seen the film, but it's as soon as I saw the box art, like, and then there's a couple pictures here on mm-hmm. IMDb. I'm like, oh, I've definitely seen this.
Yeah. No, as a kid, it was one of my favorites because I just think the cast is lovable. And it's just, again, it's kind of like Demon Dog or something where I hadn't seen that concept. I hadn't seen this concept. And I thought that was an interesting, like, basically, you know, they fall for each other, but they can't get close because he will become a demon. And she's like, no, I can make a relationship work with anybody. And, you know, so she's like trying to make it work as he's like turning into a demon. And meanwhile, there's a mangler on the loose. And so they're wondering, like, is he the mangler? You know, like, does he turn into a demon and they don't know that he's out killing people? Yeah.
Real quick, there was a question I wanted to ask you related to Devil Dog, and I forgot, but I just want to circle back to it real quick. Mm-hmm. You said you were doing research on, you know, horror movies about killer dogs. Mm-hmm. Was Devil Dog one of the first ones, or does it go back further than 78?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I didn't put them in order in my mind. I wasn't really thinking about them like that. Trying to think if I can think of anything before then. I mean, they had in The Omen, the Rottweiler.
Yeah.
And Curtis Harrington actually said on the special features that he wanted a Rottweiler for Devil Dog. But they told him that Rottweilers weren't smart enough to do the things that he wanted to do. So they kind of forced him into a German Shepherd, and he was not happy with the German Shepherd.
Interesting.
I mean, not because of the dog, just that wasn't what he wanted.
Right.
But so, yeah, I think, in terms of like his reference point, he was referencing The Omen, and I can't necessarily think of anything before that. And that wasn't the whole focus, you know,
all right,
of that movie.
Right. Interesting. All right. Well, that's one of those random questions that popped in my mind.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I will think on it and see if I can think of any other ones, but I don't think so.
Okay.
Pretty early in the Bad Dog, but I did also watch Rottweiler and Man's Best Friend, you know. I also like, there's one called Watchers. Did you ever see that with Corey Haim and Michael Ironside?
I remember the box art.
I guess the dog wasn't bad in that one, but it was a special dog and it was a horror movie. I almost included that, but Watchers and that whole series is not available. So, lack of availability crossed Watchers off the list, but if anyone wants to see another good one, Watchers is really good.
I'm gonna look this up on Google as I'm typing it in. But does Watchers have box art where it just shows Corey Haim with like a terrified look on his face?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, perfect. There it is.
And it's off of a Dean Koontz book, and there are a few sequels too, but I don't think I've seen all of them.
That's you just invoked a memory there. What year did that movie come out?
Watchers. I know. I kind of live in that little area. I think it might be 89 again.
Let's see. Release date, December 2nd, 88. Oh, you're right on it, though. Right on.
Right. Yeah, right there.
Let's see. It was, it was a Calico Pictures, you know? Mm-hmm. So they put a little money
on
this.
Yeah, no, that one's actually really well done. I mean, it's like a little higher end of a horror. It's higher end than we've been in so far on this list.
Well, Demon Lover, my Demon Lover, has an IMDb rating of 4.6 out of 10 with 1,200 reviews.
Wow. So it's that same zone, but this one's the lowest.
Yeah.
That's right? Lower than Curse 2.
Let me just come back for a second. Curse 2 is 4.8. And just to recap, Blue Sunshine is 6.0. Cursed 2 is 4.8. Devil Dog is 5.2. And My Demon Lover is 4.6. So this is, on a technical level, but who cares? This is just, I'm more...
Well, these ratings, I'm curious to see what people say, but they are making me feel, defensive of my picks.
Okay.
Here. But, everyone has different standards for what they're looking for.
Hold on just a second here. I will just give a couple. Here's a couple reviews, okay? Just the headlines of the review. This person put Somehow It Works. The next one is Classic 80s. Let's see. This is a 6 out of 10 review. This is, again, for My Demon Lover. It says, "You don't have to run to the store like a demon to find this film, but it's very likable."
Yeah, see, it's a very likable movie, I find. Like, not all the rules or the goals or anything totally add up about, first she's, pushing him away, and then she's begging him to stay, and vice versa for him. So it doesn't always match up. You're like, why is she doing this? Why is he doing that? There's some of that that's in, every rom-com. But I still think it has a lot of fun to it. And a really good climax, I think.
Okay.
Good supporting characters.
Yeah, no, awesome.
Good magic.
All right. So My Demon Lover, you've listed it on Amazon as being available on Amazon.
I think it is available. It's, I think it says, it's IMDb says weird things, but it says watch on Prime Video and then rent buy from $1.99. So I guess it's just to rent, probably.
All right, hang on just a second. As I'm doing, we're doing some real-time investigation, and as it is not available on YouTube, although the trailer is. There we go. All right, perfect. All right, so that is going to leave the last movie on your list is White of the Eye. Let's talk about White of the Eye, Kelly.
And were you familiar with this one at all?
White of the Eye? No, I'm not.
This one is, because this is 86, so I thought it might have been out there, but I was not aware of it until probably after college. And the reason I'm familiar with it is because it's written and directed by Donald Cammell, who some people know who he is, some people don't, because he only made a few movies, but they were all very, artistic and impressive. He did Performance with Nicholas Roeg, the Mick Jagger movie, and he did Demon Seed, and what else did he do? Something called The Wild Side that you kind of can't find really anymore. But what he did was impressive enough that people still talk about him, despite there just being the three movies.
And did some work with you too as well.
Yes. He was Performance, the Nicholas Roeg Mick Jagger movie had a musical component. There's always this kind of musical look to it, music video. And White of the Eye has that. And that's the main thing I really like about White of the Eye that makes it stand out from the first couple shots. So even before you know the plot, the look of it is incredible.
Okay.
And it is, it's basically about David Keith. And he's married to Kathy Moriarty. And so David Keith is a Southerner, and Kathy Moriarty has a strong New York accent. So already it's what are these two people doing together? And then it's set in Tucson, in the total, desolate desert. And so everything from the beginning is a mismatch about this movie, but so artistically mismatched that it's very, it's mesmerizing from the very start. And it basically is about these rich women are being killed and David Keith is the only suspect. And so, it actually doesn't come across as smoothly as that, even it's that simple. And yet you're cutting between this and that and the other, the family, the investigation, and his attention is not really on clues or anything. It's kind of just on the essence of being there, which, so we're very not in the territory of Curse 2. This is a whole other world from that kind of movie.
And it's interesting. You mentioned David Keith, and what a coincidence, because he's an American treasure. And, and I was actually watching, Brubaker today for some unknown reason. I just was on a Robert Redford kick, and I had seen Brubaker in 25 years, and I forgot that David Keith was in it. And then I'm like, oh my God, what else is David Keith in? An Officer and a Gentleman. And then he's the star of this movie. So now this is literally going to be the next movie I watch.
Oh,
I love David Keith.
He's so good in it. And let me tell you what's really weird. So David Keith, going back to Curse 2, The Bite. Curse 1, I should have pointed out, has nothing to do with Curse 2. It was just like Curse, or The Bite existed, and then they slapped the curse in front of it. But the original Curse starred Will Wheaton and was directed by David Keith.
No kidding.
And produced by, the credit says Louis Fulci, but it was actually Lucio Fulci. And the interiors of the movie of Curse, the original, were shot in Rome. And the exteriors were shot on David Keith's farm in Tennessee. And if you watch the movie, like, you see the signs and everything for Teleco Plains.
Yeah.
And, like, places you would probably recognize.
How cool is that? I just pulled up The Curse on IMDb. I've never seen The Curse.
Yeah, I had never seen it either. I saw Curse 2 first, and then I was like, well, I got to see the rest of the series. But none of the films have anything to do with each other.
Interesting, Kelly.
Like, no. They're not all snakes. They're not all a curse. They're, like, there's no connection.
But you know what? It's interesting here. I'm looking at the writing credits for The Curse, and it's a screenplay written by David Chaskin, who wrote Elm Street 2.
Well, oh, yeah. There you go.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the cinematographer of Elm Street did My Demon Lover. So there
this
you go.
This is like, we don't need 6 degrees of separation.
No.
I think with these movies, we just need 2. This is terrific.
I live in a certain type of a world. I'm very connected to Elm Street.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally understand that.
Yeah, The Curse, that's a whole rabbit hole. I don't know that I recommend everyone go down, but if you're, you know, curious, it's interesting for study, all of the Curse films.
How far into White of the Eye did you have sort of that aha moment, like, okay, this is brilliant, or did you know pretty much right away?
Very early on. Like, it's got great helicopter shots, and so just... First of all, like, a lot of these horror movies, they don't have the budgets for a helicopter shot. So this is like a higher level of production, but they have like these beautiful desert vistas that are amazing. And then, like the first murder, I guess, before it even gets there, there's like a department store boy, you know, carrying like boxes to this rich woman's car. And the way that it's shot, it's like wide angle, kind of like a music video. And like from that, I was like, I love it. Cause it was so bold, like the color of her tight, you know, and her gloves and whatever. And some of the fashion in this thing, like Kathy Moriarty is out in the desert wearing like a big old fur coat and red gloves. And then David Keith, there are flashbacks and he's got a crazy mullet and a turquoise collar necklace. And, like, it's amazing. Just the look of the thing is fantastic.
I can't wait. And let's see. So, White of the Eye is available on Amazon. And let me just do a quick look right here. And it is available to rent on YouTube. So, this is good.
Yeah, this one, though, is like a, you know, a respected film. But one of the actors in it, Art Evans, he was saying, who you would recognize him. He's just a guy you would recognize. He's in everything. But anyway, he plays the detective in this movie. And he was saying, like, it's one of the things he was proudest of. And until the, you know, special features on the Blu-ray or whatever I was watching, he said he had never even been asked about it. And, like, so he'll read every now and then that it has this following of, like, people respecting it. But no one had ever even talked to him about it.
All right, listen, without even pulling up his IMDb, here's a couple things I know for sure. He is in Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
He is definitely in Die Hard 2. And I want to say he was Chris Rock's father in CB4. I might be wrong about that.
He is in CB4. Nope, he is.
Okay, all right. So, yeah. So, he's great. He's great.
Listen. Yeah. He's in Fright Night.
Yes.
Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Right back in that same zone of years. He's in School Days. Jojo Dancer, Your Life is Calling.
Okay.
Into the Night, Trespass. So he's been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, perfect. Perfect.
And at the time that he was filming this, he said he was also filming Ruthless People and going back and forth between the two sets.
Oh, awesome. Well, I am looking forward to checking this one out. Now, this, Kelly, White of the Eye, you will be happy to hear, that of the five films you recommended, it has the highest rating.
Yes!
Okay, at 6.2 out of 10, which, again...
That's low! I'm surprised!
But, I'm telling you, that is... I really look at these ratings, not because I go by them, but there's a real trend with IMDb, and I'm telling you, like, you get into the middle sevens, and we're talking about, like, really popular movies. What was a popular movie that came out last year that everybody liked? Random, or maybe last year's not a good one.
Nomadland.
Okay, hold on a second. All right, let me just pull that up. And Nomadland, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture, has a 7.4 out of 10.
Wow, okay.
That's out of 110,000 reviews.
But, wow.
But that's where I tell you, like, the sixes in IMDb, that is
a sweet spot.
That's a really good score. Like that, I think that means that's a really one. That's out of 2,200.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So Blue Sunshine and White of the Eye, which those are the two that are respected films, you know.
And
the others I just love, but.
Yeah, but this backs it up. So.
Yeah, no, this one, I mean, there's no question. It's like the level of acting in White of the Eye is just incredible. And the cinematography. I mean, it's got like the Steadicam operator from Goodfellas. You know, it's like big people.
I'm in a really tough spot on which one of these I'm going to watch tonight.
Well, I will. I mean, White of the Eye is fun, but it is heavier.
Yeah.
Obviously than like Devil Dog.
I know. I kind of wanted to watch Devil Dog, but I kind of want to watch Blue Sunshine.
That I would say it cannot disappoint. Blue Sunshine can't disappoint.
That might be the one.
Sort of like a zombie movie-ish. You know, it's not zombies, but it's kind of like that. You know, it's like an infection kind of a movie.
Interesting. All right. Well, Kelly, before I let you go, I got a couple just off the cuff questions for you, just because we haven't had a chance to talk in my gosh, probably about 8 months.
Oh.
It's been a while. A couple questions. One, have you or Jimmy got a copy of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the novel yet?
We do have it.
Okay. I am holding a copy in my hand. I'm excited to get into it. Have you read it yet?
I have not read it. Jimmy's reading it right now.
Okay.
But, you know, he knows that movie so well. And so he's saying already it's like a ton of, you know, other new things that are not in the movie.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to look, you know, really go through this book. We've never really talked Tarantino too much. I know Jimmy and I did one of our Icons episodes on Tarantino, but you know, it's interesting when we did that episode, it was before Once Upon a Time had even come out. He had just he was just commenting how cool it was that they were filming it and how they sort of transformed, you know, Sunset in Hollywood into, you know, 1969. Mm-hmm. So we may have to do a supplemental episode just to talk about that film. But what did you think of the movie?
He could talk about that film forever. I'm sorry. What did you say?
But what did you think about the movie?
I have this thing. I mean, I liked the movie, but I can see this connection that guys of a certain age are having to it that is like this whole other level that I cannot have with it or something. Like, it is speaking to people. There's a frequency, like in Blue Sunshine, that has turned on certain men of a certain age, like Jimmy's age and above, who, like, it just flips on. Like, that movie is everything to them. And I don't quite have that with it, but I still really enjoy it.
With Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's a film that I saw in the theater, and it calls to me, if that makes any sense.
That's what I'm saying. It does. There's something going on that I don't feel like, I don't know. It makes me keep my distance because I know I'm not in that rarefied class that it is calling to.
And I don't know if it's because I'm in my... I guess 43 is still considered early 40s, but I'm telling you, I find myself putting that film on all the time.
There are people who have seen it so many times. Like, I mean, dozens of times.
And it's not my favorite.
And it's not short.
It's not my favorite Tarantino film.
Yeah. It's not my favorite one either. I mean, I like it a lot, but I think that's part of it too, is like, I have closer relationships with other Tarantino movies, but I also feel like I think it needs some years, you know, for me to develop that relationship, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. I have that relationship with The Hateful Eight. I love that film now.
Interesting.
I love it, but I wasn't on board when it first came out. But 6 years later, I'm just like, who wants to watch The Hateful Eight? If you've never seen it, I want to watch it with you. And I remember showing it to my girlfriend, and she's just like, how long is this? And I'm like, no, wait, I promise it's going to get better. It's going to get better.
Yeah, no, that one's one that, you know, everyone did not tap into completely. But I enjoy it. But again, it kind of had a, weirdly, even as long as it is, like, had a TV movie quality to it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of appreciated where it was coming from, like the inspirations of it. You know, when I get into it. But for me, like, I just think probably my closest relationships have been with Reservoir Dogs and Django.
Interesting. I like Django quite a bit. But that is an interesting film. That is a movie done in, like, four parts, I think, with Django. Like, that's a movie that, you know how he with Netflix had sort of an extended version of
Hateful Eight.
I'd love to see that with Django. I think there's more to explore in that movie.
I just love the world. And again, it's just so original, you know, that just the concept of it was so original and so terrifying. And I like how it's set, like, there's so, you know, movements in it. Like, you're here, then you're here, then you're here, you know, in different locations and different goals, like vastly different movies each time it resets almost. So yeah, I really, really enjoy Django.
Yeah.
And then Reservoir Dogs, I watched so many times when it came out. That one and Pulp Fiction and True Romance, if you, you know, throw that one in too.
I do. It's the greatest non-Tarantino film ever made.
I mean, that's probably, I don't want to say I've seen it the most out of all of them, but maybe.
I can say without a doubt that's the film I saw the most. I've seen the most times. That's the movie, when you give me the opportunity to show True Romance to anyone who's never seen it before. I just had a friend on not too long ago. We were doing, and you got to do this. You got to do this with us. You'd have a blast. We do these movie drafts where we, you'd be perfect. You'd be perfect for this. We did one, 1980s films, 1990s films. You have to draft a movie from that decade. But once you pick that director, whatever movie that director has done, that director is off the board. So in the 80s, you can only pick one John Hughes film. In the 90s. Yeah. And so my friend, he said, this was the 90s movie draft. And he goes, I'm going with a Tony Scott movie that I've never seen before. And I was like, you've never seen Days of Thunder before?
Oh, my.
And he's like, no, of course I've seen that. I'm like, you've never seen Crimson Tide before? He's like, no, I've seen that. I'm like, what? Oh, no. And he literally drafted True Romance. And I was like, no, that was like mine to take. But the point of that is, he had never heard of it until like 3 months ago.
Wow. I saw it in the theater.
Ah, so you were the one.
I was the one who saw it. I was so excited for it.
That when you saw that movie, did you have any inkling of the Tarantino sort of connection by that point?
I did know he wrote it, but it was otherwise, I was kind of blind about what it was, who was in it, you know, all of it. I had no idea I was getting into like one of my favorite movies ever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, I would say that, you know, Jaws is firmly planted in the number one spot. And I like to say that my 2 through 10 is somewhat revolving, but I can guarantee that True Romance stays in that top 10 forever.
Yeah. I love it so much and reference it all the time.
Oh, yeah. No, it's
like every time I think about Free Jack, I think about True Romance because, like, it's what's on TV when Brad Pitt's like, you know, smoking weed on the couch. So, like, those two movies are always linked in my head, Free Jack and True Romance.
So, my first time to L.A. was last year. And so, when I saw the Capitol Records building, I'm looking for the freeway that goes by it. I'm like, where's the freeway where Alabama and Clarence drive by with the Aerosmith song playing? Because I'm on the opposite side. I'm like on Hollywood Boulevard. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, but where's that freeway? And I'm with the guy I'm with. I'm like, can we go on that freeway? Because I want to just take that shot like from the car. Like that's how insane I was about the Capitol Records building. because of True Romance.
Yeah, I thought that with, did you see the Safari Motel?
No, where was the Safari Motel? Where was it? I missed it.
It's in Burbank. I think it's technically in Burbank. But every time I drive by it, I'm like, oh, I gotta go there sometime. And all these years, I still haven't stayed there.
And I'm telling you, it's the best. It's the best. We could do an episode just breaking that film down sometime if you ever want to, because
yeah, I love it. I really, really love it.
I have theories on who Lee Donowitz is inspired by, but maybe we'll talk about that off mic. So
yeah. Well, by the way, so one of the most times I've been the most excited to see a famous person was when I saw Saul Rubinek at the movie theater, and I was like, oh my God, it's Saul Rubinek. And like almost followed him into his movie. It was like for some reason, you never know who's going to strike you as like, whoa, you know, star power. And for me, it was Saul Rubinek.
He's the best in that movie. And I like him in other things. Like he's, to correct me if I'm wrong, he's in The Contender with Joan Allen and Gary Oldman.
That sounds right.
I feel like
he's in so many things.
But he's the best. He's the best as Lee Donowitz. Like he is the best. That character is out of his mind. And okay, listen, Kelly, if people want to keep up with the work you're doing, want to follow you on social media, how can they do that?
It's not going to be easy. Yeah. I don't post regularly. I'm not great at it. I'm generally under the handle at nilblogette, but yeah, I wouldn't expect timely updates from me. Right now I'm working on getting like TV shows and things like that going. So hopefully one of them will happen. And we'll discuss that at some point. Perfect. But that's pretty much what I'm doing, is avoiding social media, watching, Saul Rubinek movies.
It sounds like, you know, that sounds like the best day ever. So Kelly, thank you as always. Thank you for coming up with this list. I'm really excited to check all of these movies out. And I look forward to having you back on the show really, really soon. And stay safe out there. And we'll definitely talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My name is Dana Buckler. And thank you so much for listening.